ladies and gentlemen, in the corner store, we have just a brilliant maker, someone whose visual work I've been impressed by for a while now, who is on a run. I mean, even though we are in these in shelter times, I mean, before we went inside, Yvette Mayorga is kind of on a tear in terms of the gallery, in terms of her production. Also features her work on the cover of the brand new Breakbeat book, the Latinx book. But someone whose work I think is really important, changing the visual landscape for many, and I think ushering a whole new voice into the gallery and soon to be museum scene. In the corner store this afternoon, we have Yvette Mayorga. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to finally have a chance to talk more about art and life, and now a different situation that we're all living in.
Yeah, well, no, thank you. We've wanted to have you for a while. How are you adapting? How are you, and how are you adapting to these new times?
Yeah, I mean, I've been fine. I can speak for myself. I think a lot of us have been through, similar situations in life where there's grief in the air, and, you can feel it, and everybody in your house can feel it. And when you walk outside, you also feel that, that maybe you might be the only one experiencing this, but it seems to be like a moment that several others can maybe see that you're experiencing. And I feel like I'm sort of going through that again. And so, being mindful of that and reminding myself like, yeah, I mean, this is definitely, not an easy situation. And it's hard for a lot of people, especially undocumented people, people who fall on, the margins of being marginalized and not having access to healthcare, etc. But I'm trying to just be thankful that I'm healthy, that I have like a space where I can create work at home, that I have a home, that I have food, that I even though my family's not physically here and I can't see them, that I can still call them. And so I feel like I've I'm so used to like being busy and constantly like working and making and deadlines. And I feel like this has really kind of forced me to like go back to, the things that are really like fundamentally important to being a person, getting well, enough rest, taking care of your health, having time for self-care and all that sort of stuff. So I feel like it's been helpful in that way. But again, it should not take an epidemic to slow, us down or to feel like you are worthy enough by not doing, or not being productive. Being productive in different ways, but,
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's been interesting too, doing the whole virtual situation, having conversations virtually, like seeing exhibitions go up virtually. It's strange.
Yeah, it's like, strange. It's been kind of amazing because I've been in some galleries with openings that have been, entirely virtual.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, but it's different, obviously.
It is, yeah. And, then I think, like, it's not that different because we're already viewing art in this sort of similar landscape through Instagram, and often people, that's like the only opportunity that they maybe have to view certain kinds of exhibitions, certain works from artists who are, not in the same place as them or have work in different places. And so I feel like we're already kind of doing that, but it feels very disconnected, of course, from the experience of going to a show and seeing it in person and seeing community in person. It's different to see community like through a name on the screen, and
So I want to ask about your process, and I wonder, one, is it changed in the little bit of in shelter, or are you kind of at it in the same way? And I'm curious about before this time too, and I have, but has your process changed in the last month or so?
It definitely has, because I felt myself be making less. Where I have an idea and then I go you know, full force trying to realize it. And now I've been slowing down and I'm staring at like a lot of drawings I've been doing, which drawing is part of my process, but I feel like now I've, you know, I've had more time to think things through, to, you know, to dream about next works, next, you know, possible installations. And I've been making here and there, but on a small scale. And usually, you know, I'm working big scale, like even behind me. I haven't had a chance to, you know, to go back and work on it. I've been working more on these, like, sort of,
right,
you know, 12 by 12
square canvases. Are those square canvases?
Works. Yeah, or, yeah, or smaller works. And that just seems more doable for me, I think, right now.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I do see a lot of, I think I see, you know, 50 and 50 on social media, like maybe half of artists that I know, like, talking about being very productive and that this is the time for us to be productive and think about, like, future projects. And then I see other half of, you know, the creative community being like, you know, this is, like, you don't have to do anything and it's fine. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm in the middle somewhere where, I think it's a good place to be, where you shouldn't feel like you have to be, you know, super productive, because again, this is definitely not a normal time.
I think it's some space to move a little bit slower. You know, yeah. I certainly think a lot of this is about being a little more thoughtful about how we move and the ways that we move. And you're right. I mean, even what you said up top is that, you know, any time is a time to amplify inequity, and definitely, you see it really ramped up now in ways that are unconscionable and grotesque, as they always are. But now I think you know, and maybe it coming to light, I mean, the optimist in me wants to think that as it comes to light, you know, maybe some of these things will be addressed. The you know, pessimist and, you know, the one who, you know, I believe that until capitalism is, you know, brought down or is, you know, radically reconceived, then it's just going to be business as usual, you know, but.
Right. Yeah, so, definitely. And I feel like, you know, we've, personally, I think we've had a double loss, you know, with the whole Bernie dropping out also. And it
were,
just kind of.
Were you a Bernie like, guy? Were you?
Yeah.
That was your guy?
That was my guy.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, that was my guy. So, you know, that was, and for many reasons, you know, and a lot of young, you know, people, young individuals, candidates do. And I just feel like he, you know, he kind of flipped the switch on, you know, having young people be more interested in, you know, voting and their rights and being part of that process. So, but yeah, that was, I mean, it was sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a sad day.
Yeah.
So it's been a compilation, I think, of situations.
So I want to talk about your work. You know, your art is visual, but it isn't even really 2D. I mean, your work actually kind of, in some instances, either seems to, or in some cases actually, you know, jumps off of the canvas or the material, you know, the surface that you're making art on. You're also mixing materials in which you are you know, composing. I want to get to how that came to be, but when did you start to make art?
Yeah, you know, so my whole life, really, and, you know, I was really influenced by my older siblings. My, you know, I have four older siblings, sorry, I'm the fifth one. But
it's a lot to remember, so that you're forgetting. Yeah. Yeah.
Two of them that were in the house still, that were closer to my age, that we, you know, we grew up more, a little bit closer. They were always making at home. And so that sort of introduced me to art. And, you know, they both happened to be in AP art classes in high school. And then I, you know, went along in that track too. And that, you know, I think having a teacher like Mr. DeJoy that I had in my senior year in my AP class, like, he sort of started to introduce the possibility of careers, you know, as art. And, you know, I was thinking about fashion design, and then I was also thinking about interior design, which is, you know, why I'm so fascinated with, like, transforming spaces. And, you know, I ended up going into painting and more like a traditional route.
Where was high school?
high school is in Moline, Illinois, at Moline High School. So it's about 2 hours northwest of here. So long story short, my parents were here in the 70s for a while, and then my oldest two siblings were here in school in Little Village. My parents lived on Central Park and 26th Street, across the street from the St. Agnes Catholic School. That's where my siblings went. And then they ended up moving out to Moline because of a factory job at Tyson Meats that one of my dad's cousins was working at, John Deere. And, you know, other people from our small town in Mexico were also working at Tyson. So that was sort of their introduction to moving, you know, getting out of Chicago. And also, I think, you know, like not wanting my brother to, you know, get in trouble. And that was sort of starting to begin. And, you know, like a lot of families, they leave the city for several reasons. So Moline High School. And after that, I went to U of I in Champaign for 4 years and did painting. And then it was about my, I would say, junior to senior year where I started experimenting with different materials. And I was actually using real frosting to make, you know, these large sculptural works. And because I was talking about, you know, like the dichotomy of the two places that I wanted to talk about in my work. And, you know, and I was also thinking about my family's labor and, you know, baking, construction, candy making, all linked to Chicago and Moline, and, you know, factory work, like Tyson Meats, my mom working at a shampoo packaging company for a while. But I didn't have the language yet, you know, to start thinking about the maybe those connections with my material until, maybe my senior year, where I was like, okay, and, you know, I can use also paint, I can use, multimedia to talk about, the sort of labor that I want to talk about, and just making with the piping bag and putting the material in the bag and then referencing that same labor that my mom did in the 70s at Marshall Fields, you know, and, you know, the labor that my family has continued to do in different ways. But I was really interested in referencing that. And so then it was natural to move, I did fiber material studies, MFA program at SAC, and that's when I started to do more of the installation-based work. And then I would say towards, you know, the end of my second year, last year, then I went back to painting. But I feel like, you know, it was super important to go through the non-conventional material, breaking down what a painting is, and then going to the 3D to then be able to go back to the 2D in a way that I felt like rejected all of the, art historical references that I wanted to reject with oil painting.
Yeah, no, amazing. So that moment where you figure out the piping, it must be pretty revelatory. I mean, it's one of the things that I associate with your work, and one of the things I think that has carried over for you as a practice, as a technique. It's stunning because it looks absolutely like, you know, I've been close enough to some of them where it is coming off the canvas or the surface. But it's real paint that you're using to pipe through a bag.
Yeah, it's real paint. I don't have, they're far away from me, but it's real paint. I just use piping bags.
Yes.
And then the ends get cut off, and then, you know, I have...
I love that you're showing. I appreciate that you're showing. This is for folks who cannot see, which is all of you. Yvette is holding up a piping bag and the nozzle, I guess, which you pipe through. And you put paint in that bag and then actually take that to the canvas to get such a rich, what looks like a rich brushstroke, but is this technique. And it is elevated then off of the canvas. It's amazing the you know, what happens to it.
Yeah, and, you know, and since it's paint, it's called modeling paste. I don't know if you can see it, but oh, you can't. It's modeling paste. It's just like a thicker acrylic paint that has the similar consistency to frosting. And it's just layers and layers of paint until, you know, I get the sort of depth that I want. But, you know, it's like you really can't make any mistakes with it, which is why I love ceramics, you know, why I love... sculptural work more than, you know, traditional painting, because, you know, you can play so much with the material to really make the material malleable to what you want it to be. Yeah. Of course, ceramics, it's a little bit more complicated because, you know, if you don't work with the material correctly, it can dry and crack and all of that. But as far as building, I mean, you know, it's whatever your hands can do, the material can do for you.
So that's one of your techniques. I want to ask about your color palette. Because, you know, I don't know all of your work, but what I've seen, you kind of have the kind of bringing through and altering of pastels seems to be something that as color choices, you're, you know, is pretty consistent throughout some of your work. How do you come to that color palette?
I think it came naturally with my obsession with the Rococo, with the interiors, you know, that reference to Rococo, and then going back to, like, you know, the interiors of the churches I've been, you know, in and outside the U.S. and Mexico, and, you know, it's that same color palette. It's like that luscious, those decadent, you know, colors that make you really want to, like, continue to look and make you want, you know, the work. And in the same way that I was so fascinated by that, I also, you know, want to place that onto the viewer when they're viewing the work. So that, I guess, you're also aware that those colors can do that to you, you know, when viewing work, and especially with the texture. And then, you know, after you've gone through that, then you can get to the, you know, content or unpacking or unveiling of a lot of the iconography that's in the work. But definitely, you know, my obsession with the Rococo, and also with notions, you know, of, like, gender and what, you know, what girlhood should be like, and, you know, what sort of colors are attributed to the gender. And, you know, I like to think that I can subvert that also through the use of them. You know, like, I often quote, you know, Dr. Jillian Hernandez, who is a wonderful scholar and has written about my practice, and Nicki Minaj, and, you know, like, the power of pink and nails. And, you know, she coins, like, you know, pink as a weapon of mass destruction. I think, you know, similar to the material that I use, you know, and talking about that labor and that gendered feminine labor of baking or decorating, I think the color, you know, the colors that I use can also do that.
Well, right, because then it makes, because it's, you know, we've not yet talked about your subject matter, which is, yes, has so much depth and is, you know, inherently from, you know, an outsider viewing it, is making, you know, these very important, urgent political statements and wrestling with issues of migration and, you know, wage laborers and issues of womanism, and all of these things wrapped up in, you know, what is just at a surface level, you know, almost like a cupcake, right? But then you look at it further and you're like, oh, shit, this is not, it's not sweet.
Right.
Yes, right. Exactly. So subject matter wise, you know, and you know, and again, I don't know the entirety of your work, and your work is always progressing. But what is some of the things, the themes that you want and do explore in your work?
Yeah, I think, you know, and it varies depending on what the piece is. But I think, you know, the most common themes are, you know, the Latinx experience, iconography that relates to that. Again, you know, being a daughter of immigrants, being woman identifying, what that has meant as, you know, living and growing up in the U.S. as a Latinx woman and now artist, maker, you know, but several actual encounters with, you know, militarization, you know, known traversing of the borders from, you know, my dad and stories that I grew up listening to and other relatives, and all of that makes its way into the work, you know, in a sort of collage-like, manufactured, made-up, true world where a lot of these things come together and, you know, to create these sort of really worlds that I'm building that house all of these different stories through, you know, a surrealist kind of way, where some of them don't make sense. Some of them maybe shouldn't be next to each other, like the slides, you know, that I'm referencing from childhood games, like the Polly Pockets shouldn't necessarily be in the same space as an apprehension or something that's signifying that. And so I like to have all of those images in the same space to talk about like the complexity of a lot of these situations, also like the reality and the fantasy and the sort of exotification of them too.
Yeah, juxtaposition is so interesting to me, and I immediately think about, you know, one of the, you know, aesthetic foundations of hip hop is as the juxtaposing of things that shouldn't be, you know, should in quotes in the same space, but then hip hop artists in, you know, their brilliance and ingenuity find ways to make sense of these things that are seemingly disparate. I'm wondering about aesthetic foundations for you. Is it hip hop? Is it music, culture? You know, what are some of the things other than, you know, you've alluded to some of your family's experience, the things you've inherited and seen, but aesthetically, what are some of the ways that you get to make the work that you do?
Yeah, I think it's culture. I think it's consumerism is a big one, I think, for me. And I think, you know, I think having the opportunity to grow up and, you know, like live my school year round here and then be in Mexico, you know, for the whole summer and like be there for 3 months and sometimes like come back like a week or two late for school. And, you know, like you could do that back in the 90s. I don't think you can do it now. But I think that experience of being able to be in the two places and see again, like, you know, the differences and the similarities in the consumerist imagery, you know, like the idealism towards having American things in Mexico and like, you know, Mickey Mouse and Tweety Bird and, you know, the Polly Pocket and Hello Kitty. And all of that, you know, has also made its way into the work because, you know, they're objects of a consumerist desire of an attaining of America, you know, through in a different place, you know, and that's sort of how I made that relationship of being influenced by those two spaces of seeing like the similarities and the differences and how maybe they both desire to be each other in different ways.
No, that's real. Now, of course, being a Latinx person in Chicago is a particular kind of experience. And, you know, I'm wondering, I guess, you know, what has that been like for you? Why do you stay here? What's some of the things about the city and maybe the Latinx community, the Latinx art community, or maybe the broader art communities that you find? You know, what do those things feed you, and what are your characterizations of those communities?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I live and work in Pilsen, and so I'm surrounded by other, you know, Latinx creatives, writers, photographers, artists, makers, and that's really important too. You know, to be surrounded by, you know, people that I call colleagues but are also friends, and, you know, we eventually collaborate on something. That's really exciting to me and really feeds my practice. And, you know, community is such an important thing also, not only to my practice, but to my livelihood as well. And I think I wouldn't live anywhere else right now. I think, you know, Chicago feels like home. You know, I've only been here for 6 years. It's not a long time. You know, I don't think I've been here enough to call myself a Chicagoan, for sure. But I wouldn't trade it for any other place. I think that we have, you know, a thriving arts community. I think Chicago is starting to be more well known for art, for music, et cetera, you know, in comparison to like LA and New York. You know, I think it's starting to play that role too. And so I think there's a lot of exciting things that are happening here. And, you know, it's just like the people here, they're not anywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I also think you're a big part of you know, the scenes getting attention to. And I'm wondering, you know, I think sometimes people will rise to a call, and because there's been historically, but in the last bunch of years, because of not only the president, but just the rhetoric then that is ushered into a dominant cultural and dominant political space. So much of that, the white supremacists have really latched on in, very, very, verbosely in the last few years, directing a lot of their hate toward Latinx communities. The Latinx community then are we in a kind of renaissance that is in part a response to this, or is it just, maybe there are more folks that are becoming more and more visible and maybe just dominant, maybe culture is a little late, or it just seems like there is a bit of an uptick, but maybe I'm reading it wrong too.
Yeah, no, I think it's both, because, and maybe like a second, revolutionary movement, because then you also had the Chicano movement that happened, way before our time, but, there are still a lot of issues of, masculinity within the group and, misogyny. And I feel like this newer generation that I'm a part of, I think is starting to address a lot of those issues within our communities, creative communities. And so I think maybe that's one of the differences. And also, a lot of us, a lot of second generations have made our way into the institutions. And, not saying again, like, that the institutions are everything and the institutions can make or break us. But, it's a fact that representation in an institution can pave the way for more representation and access and, et cetera. And it's like that pipeline that continues. And so I really feel like having more Latinx visibility in academia, in these institutions has made it not maybe easier, but, just a tiny bit easier for us to make our way there too, or to be able to see ourselves, and it's the same way why I continue to make work about, the topics related to my identity that I wanted to always make work about, but I was constantly, being told like, it's not, identity is kind of like played out, make work about something else, or, turn your palate down a little bit less excessive, all of these sort of, white supremacist things to say about art making, know, and categorizing my making as other. That's really what told me, that I needed to continue to do it this way, because I was being truthful to my story, to, my family's story, to our history. And yeah, I think that's kind of on the wave that we're on, where we've seen the system fail us in different ways. And we feel like being truthful in our trajectory as people, with identities and, families that have been here for a long time. And, weren't able to have access to a lot of the things that maybe we are now, and using them for the good, to make space for the generations that then come after us, for my nieces and nephews. And
no, that's dope. And you've broken into some pretty big gallery spaces, some pretty, traditional spaces, in the last few years. Where are some of the places that you have you been surprised that have, like fucked with your work?
Yeah. Let's see. I think, being outside of Chicago, being in, shows in LA and New York, I think that's been really, like a big deal for me, my work was visible here in Chicago and I, was showing a lot and, in galleries and institutions, and I think also being able to show in these different cities that, can make, or, can maybe coin like, who is making it and who isn't. I think that was a big deal in itself. And, showing work for LACMA, Pacific Standard Time in 2017, that was a big deal for me, that I could be part of that. Yeah, such an important exhibition and really time for LA, you know, to be showcasing a lot of Latinx voices that hadn't been before and have been invited by curator Vincent Ramos, curator and artist, and that was a big deal. And then be amongst, you know, other artists that I admired too in the same space. And then in 2019, having a solo show in New York at a gallery at Gary Contemporary was a huge deal too. So, yeah, I think just being in these spaces is, you know, it's a huge deal. And, you know, I definitely don't take it for granted.
Yeah, well, congratulations on all of the success. Now, I know the world is where it is, but what is next for you? Like, where, what are you, do you have work that is, will be shown? Like, what are some of the things you have in the future?
Yeah. So I do have some things coming up again, you know, like we don't know if things will end up being postponed, but, a couple things that were happening this month that are now, you know, have been moved, I was part of a group show at the Vincent Price Art Museum, which was about non-traditional aspects to painting, which is really exciting. And now it's pushed back to spring 2021, so that'll be in the future. The DePaul Art Museum, who just collected my work too, that's another huge deal. And they're actually going to have an exhibition in the fall, the Latinx American, that will showcase a lot of the new acquisitions and work that, you know, they're doing around the Latinx community here in Chicago. And then again, hopefully, you know, October we're good and able to travel. I have a solo show coming up at St. Paul, Minnesota, the Law Warshaw Gallery. And that'll be in the fall, and it's a continuation of Monochromatic Dreams, which just closed off in Austin, and we'll be traveling there in the fall. And then possibly, you know, for a triennial 2020 at Mustel del Barrio in the fall. But, you know, hopefully everything goes through and yeah, we can make that happen. But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, well, that's a lot. And I'm excited for you. A big fan of yours, and you know, appreciate your time today, and appreciate your work in the world, and was very grateful to have your work grace the cover of the Latinx Breakbeat anthology. So thank you so much for that too.
Yeah, no, thank you too. You know, it's been such an honor and just amazing to see people continue to share it, and you know, and to even, you know, be able to read it. And
I mean, that book is really making its rounds right now, certainly.
Definitely, yeah. And it's, you know, it's been, yeah, it's just been cool to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where can people stay in tune with all that you do?
Yeah, so my website, YvetteMayorga.com, and then on my Instagram, you can also follow me at YvetteMayorga. Yeah, and you'll be able to keep up with, you know, studio things or things that are upcoming, things I'm working on.
Well, Yvette, thank you so much for being in the corner store and spending some time with us this afternoon.
Yeah, same. Thanks to you. It's been fun.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official corner store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the snack door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the corner store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The corner store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.